And we're going to hear now about a relatively new academic discipline and area of cultural study with the unlikely title of olfactory heritage. I should explain it's all about the study of smells and how certain places or industries or objects or activities like sport each have their own particular smell, plus how certain smells were more notable at particular times in history. A new exhibition's opened at the Maryland Center for History and Culture in the U.S. city of Baltimore that encourages families to use all their senses to learn more about history. It is called Wayfinders, Making Sense of Our World. It is designed for everyone from the age of 5 upwards, and the experiences it offers include cranking up a bucket elevator, sniffing beehives, and listening to cicadas. Let's hear now live from Sophia, it's gone off my screen, just one second, Sophia Colette Eirich, who is art historian and olfactory museologist who worked as a consultant on this exhibition. Sophia, welcome to Weekend. Tell us more about olfactory heritage. What does it involve?
Hi, thank you for having me. So as you can imagine, olfactory heritage is a relatively new and niche field, as you already explained also. And it looks at how smell is part of our cultural history and everyday life. It involves researching scents connected to objects, places, and practices, such as perfume making, whiskey distilling, incense burning, or it could also be the smell of a historic house. It also involves finding ways to preserve and safeguard these processes so people today can experience and better understand our olfactory past. And I wanted to give one of my favorite examples of olfactory heritage is actually from 2023. The governor of the state of New Mexico declared that the state should have a national aroma, which is green chilies roasting in the fall. And they're the only state in the United States to actually have a state aroma.
Everyone should have a national aroma. It sounds a fantastic idea. You're a historian by training. How did this discipline develop in relation to art exhibitions?
Yeah, so I was working on my bachelor's degree in art history at UCLA, and I was always trained to complete visual analysis of painting and artworks, of course, and that was part of being an art historian was to constantly think about the visual, looking for symbols or iconographies or hidden meanings in artworks. And years later, I took a class with a professor who is also an art historian, and she specializes in olfactory history. Actually, there are people who specialize in olfactory history, and she taught me how to raise what is called an olfactory gaze to art history. And that really shifted my perspective. And I started asking myself, what smells are being presented in artworks and what do they tell us about the past? And I also realized that it's such an amazing way to remember and relate to art history. And I wish that I would have known that when I was working on my bachelor's in art history at UCLA, because I think I would have remembered the artworks a lot better if someone told me how they smelled.
Were you always a believer in the cognitive power of smell and taste? As an undergraduate, did you read a lot of Proust or something about the power of the memory and the Madeleine?
No, I mean, I always was interested in scent. My mom was always interested in aromatherapy, but I really fell into this topic while I was doing my master's in Europe and met this professor. So it was kind of serendipitous or just random. But I really just found my passion in this and I love it.
Annetta, you like the idea too of olfactory heritage, don't you?
I think it's a really interesting idea. Yes. I guess to me, from my perspective, it resonates with fieldwork, right? What I mentioned earlier, because you don't just understand a place by reading about it. But instead really you need to experience it with all senses. And I think that's really the idea here.
And you can imagine taking your children to such a museum.
Well, I do think that for children, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because to them, they are much better at memorizing things when you engage them with senses, including smell.
What's it like, Sophia, seeing visitors to this exhibition, particularly young ones, interact?
It was really, really cool because I actually, as much as I've planned olfactory exhibitions before, I hadn't seen a lot of interaction with my work. And that last week I was able to watch a group of fourth graders interact with all of the scents in the exhibition. And it was really interesting because they were able to interact with the topics in a different way. And a lot of them, of course, were quite impulsive. So they said, "Oh, that smells terrible," or they really liked it. But I think it's also a very powerful tool for not just children, but for adults. And it's a level, adds a new layer of accessibility, right? So that we can, for those who are low sighted or who can't see the artworks, they're able to experience the artworks in a different way. And so that's another thing I really love about olfactory heritage, but also olfactory museology, that it can add a new layer of meaning to art for anyone.
Isabel, you've got the same minor preoccupation as me, I gather, in the knowledge that people smelled quite a lot worse in the past.
I was going to say, if we're going to be honest about historical smells, I think we have to recognise that, you know, they weren't great. You remember the great, I'm sure you don't personally remember the great stink of 1858, neither do I, but it was one of the great moments in London when the level of the Thames dropped and it was a hot summer, the windows of Parliament were open, and it was absolutely unbearable, the smell of sewage and rotting carcasses. And that's what gave us our sewage system in London. It was just unbearable.
Lovely olfactory note to end on. Sophia Colette Erich, art historian in the US, many thanks for coming on Weekend. This is the BBC World Service.